In tech we trust. It's the people in charge we're not sure about. Hi, and welcome to episode number 12 of the In Tech We Trust podcast. 12 is a very mythical and magical number in our history. There were 12 Olympians, 12 sons of Odin and Jacob, by the way, 12 apostles, and as we get closer to the end of the year, we'll have the 12 days of Christmas. Let the 12 drummers drum and welcome our partridge in a pear tree, my brother Rickatron.
Hey, I was going to follow that up, guys, with the 12 eggs in my little dozen basket. I thought that was a good addition to the mythical number here.
So what happened, Rick? I mean, we've lost you for how many episodes? What was your last episode?
VMworld Europe when we were in
person.
Wow,
that's number four or five.
Oh, man. Fail. Rickatron down.
Yeah.
No, guys, it's been a tough run. I've been real busy. Some travel. I did take an incredible personal vacation and actually took 2 of the weeks off.
How was Portugal?
Wife and I went to Portugal. I am the off-season tourist. I love going when there's nobody around. Mm-hmm. And Portugal is interesting, right? It did not participate in World War II, so it wasn't destroyed, right? All the history is still there. Had a great time. It was good stuff.
And you know the decreased population or whatever, Rick appreciates it that you come in the off season too.
Mm-hmm. And
the regulars still live there. The regulars are still there. They love it. They love you.
I hate lines. I hate dealing with people. It wasn't crowded. It was perfect.
I hate dealing with people, says the evangelist.
That's right, grumpy evangelist.
Yeah, grumpy evangelist.
Grumpy evangelist. So, did you bring back port?
No. Okay. I don't like wine.
But you have.
No, I didn't drink any wine. And the beer there was eh.
Yeah.
So I was there for the scenery, not for the liquid.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So, hey, guys, we will not hear any Queen's English today, as our beloved friend Nigel, now having that $1 billion contract for a container ship in the Middle East, he's trying to get some captains and crew together at HP Discover in Barcelona. We did test the hotel Wi-Fi earlier, but that was not sufficient to be on a show. Gabriel is doing a dog and pony show today, of which I highly doubt it's even a metaphor in his case. But we do have, and you already heard him, Mark joining us, who just sold one of his products that don't exist yet. By the way, Mark, I'm drinking a dry-hopped Belgian ale, as we discussed in the last week's show, and some people actually commented that Mark talking about brewing beers got me out of my element for the first time. Maybe that's just because I let you finish your sentences and not interrupt you.
Well, that whistle noise that you heard was me blowing air across the bottle top of one of my Bodacious Browns, which came out of the refrigerator. I brought it to work with me. Co-workers have been drinking it, giving it thumbs up. I don't know if they're just being polite or actually enjoying it, but that's what I'm having right now, Hans.
Blowing air, is that one of your hobbies?
Making beer is one of my
hobbies. He's in the cloud business thing, so sure.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, guys, speaking of last week's show, we did a whole rant on the Azure cloud storage going tits up for over 11 to 12 hours globally. There was a similar issue earlier this year at Dimension Data Cloud Solutions in Australia. They went out for over 24 hours due to an EMC array going down. And today there was an article out that they did a whole survey of what happened during that downtime, and what did strike me a little bit, and I know this is something we say, but I'm not sure they should have said it, is that they do blame the customers if they had an issue with the downtime. If they
had, this business would be great if it wasn't for the customers.
Yeah, well, no, seriously, we actually spoke about it last week. How do you do your failover? You make sure you have two zones, and if a zone goes down, you will fail over to the other zone. You design for that, and they actually literally said the ones that suffered the most had themselves to blame. It is a little bit harsh as vendor to use those words, not...
Well, that is a pretty harsh term. Those who hurt the most, it's their own fault. Yeah, you know, you're taking a risk, and I deal with this all the time because I get the question, how do you do cloud? And I'm like, well, what do you want to do in the cloud? And all I do is think about when things go wrong. And the moment something goes wrong in a cloud platform or a service provider or the like, you're instantly going to realize that there's a huge difference between what you can manage and what you can control. And if you're talking about the run state of your app or of your service and it's something that goes down, you're kind of screwed.
Yeah, well, I think you can look at it like these services are devices, and you think, well, yeah, you have to have redundancy because you would never buy a disk drive and fail to have redundancy for that. But the fact is, these are very big operations, and they're cloud services, and there's this notion of SLAs, you know, and that was your point last week, Hans, is that, you know, do these SLAs mean anything? And, you know, it's pretty hard to read a discussion that was posted this week where they're blaming the customers. Like, well, yeah, but the SLA or the expectations for uptimes, however many nines it is, what is it, 1 9, 2 9s or something like that? It's not where we really need it to be for this industry. And I think for the cloud industry to succeed, it needs to up its game. And I don't know what needs to be done necessarily, but I think when you've got downtime for 12 hours or whatever, that really shoots a big hole in whatever expectations you've got for SLAs or uptime.
There was actually a pretty good conversation following up on that, what I said there, that what is the value of an SLA if they can breach it at any time. And the comment some people gave me, and it actually kind of makes sense somehow, is that the SLA you sign is the one they agree upon for the price you pay. And they could be paying you parts back, whether or not in services or monetary, if they breach that SLA. And it kind of somewhere makes sense, but it's not how we perceive it. It's how... So towards the contracts you sign, it makes sense. This is what I will do for you. If not, I'll pay you back. That is the value of a contract. That is the actual value of an SLA. However, what we don't do, and this is where the business comes in, what we don't do is taking that into account, knowing what we will do as a company when that SLA would be breached. You will get your money back somehow at a percentage or in extra services, but what will you do to your business? And that is the bigger question. Do you know how you will make sure that your business is still up and running? One of my biggest fears is data that is lost because of an external fact, because of a cloud company that you have a contract with and you had an SLA with them. If they lose data, you could actually go out of business. And that is your responsibility because you signed a contract with someone else. So that is one of the things. I'm kind of okay that an SLA can be breached, but I still want my business to be up and running. And that's I think that is somehow a thought and a mindset that we should and could change under CIOs. Some of the solutions could be working and not only in two zones but with two providers, for example.
Right. Absolutely. I think a lot of customers are trying to figure out how they can use multiple providers. And that's costly. It kind of turns the economics on its side to do that.
Or upside down. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's not really a question of, you know, okay, what do I do if that 1.9 goes to an 8, right? That 0.001, whatever it is, time of downtime, 11 hours. I'll just use this because it's the example at hand. It's happened before. Amazon's had problems. I don't think vCloud Air have yet. Twitter goes down, used to a lot, right? I think Facebook got boogered up once. Gmail was down. It's going to happen again. Right, but how much of what we care about, what do we sign the SLA, what's on my head to work. And, okay, those of you who know what's up with me, right, I talk about backups. Honestly, if there was an 11-hour window where I couldn't put backups to Azure, I'd be okay because it would carry on. But if it was the other way around, I'm running something important in Azure and it's down for 11 hours, it's different, right? I don't know.
Or if you're trying to recover, right? You've got backups.
Right? That's a slice of the slice, right, of the time of the use case. But the thing that bugged me about the Azure bit, multi-zonal.
That was the most horrible part. 12 or 13 of the 15 zones going down, that's major.
That is like – that almost feels fundamentally wrong with cloud design or yes. Staging of changes. Change control on that scale, I do not have any experience.
That is the reason why people will now, in their plans to go all clouds, will look more to multiple providers.
Yeah, but then the money comes back into play, Mark said. I've already got a data center. I'll just, maybe deprioritize cloud for now. Or test dev. Okay. Test dev. Yeah. I'll do test dev with downtime. That's fine.
Yeah. One of the things on cloud is that it will make things cheaper. No, it will not. It will make things easier in the faster we can provide things, the agility, the flexibility you'll have. There's a lot of things to win there, but it will not make it cheaper because if you want to design well, it's going to cost you money. And by the way, it's the exact same conversation we had with virtualization. Virtualization did not necessarily make everything cheaper as it was touted for in the beginning. It made it the same price, but you could do a lot more with it. It didn't make it cheaper.
It's actually the reverse. Cloud economics, I think, kind of start to cross to the negative on entirely large scale. But on small scale, they make sense. Virtualization had a really tough to sell on the small scale. But on the enterprise scale, it made sense.
Yeah.
Okay? Like if I have the one server shop, I'm like punch drunk in love with this VMware and Hyper-V stuff. That was a really tough sell for that person to make that change. Mm-hmm. But if I have somebody who's out of space and power and cooling, then it's a no-brainer. But there's other problems that come with it. But the simple economics are kind of a mirror image of negative and positive on small and large of each other.
But hey, not everything is bad news in the clouds. There's also good news from time to time. Google, of all, has now announced the payment card industry certification. That's a big one to get. If they say they want to certify your cloud, I think you got a pretty good certification there.
Yeah, so I don't know how many times I leave my house without my billfold and have my cell phone with me that I want to pay for something. Well, let's see, that happened to me last week. So, I guess I could get on board with it. I'm usually a Luddite, though, where any of this technology comes payment. I like to have cash. I like to buy things with cash. I still go to ATMs. It's an interesting thing. I guess, does this stuff help reduce identity theft? If so, how? I mean, to me, that would be the real thing. If you can use your phone to pay for something and it means that you're less prone to identity theft, I would use it. Otherwise, I don't think I would.
So what it is that the standard will enable our customers to hold, process, or exchange cardholder information from any branded credit card on the Google Cloud platform. And one of the first developers on that will be WePay. So it really is the Google platform as such will be a standard for other companies to use credit card information on. Not really from Google itself yet, as Google will provide the platform for it.
Well, this is an encouraging news. We have to make payment easier. Credit cards are good, but there's a big problem that Mark talked about with identity theft, and I've had it, especially in the U.S. It's a real problem.
God, who hasn't had it? We all get it. I mean, it hammers all of us.
Anyways, I'd love to see this problem solved, and if the cloud can come to the rescue here for that. I mean, I used to work in a bank, right, and I had PCI as something I had to deal with, and that's one of the reasons I left the bank, okay? But here's the thing.
Then you joined the dark side.
Hey, man, it's the green side. It's always greener on my side. But anyways, here's the thing about being PCI compliant. It really doesn't mean anything. It just means some basic controls are in place and people have looked at the processes. Okay, and any technology can be quote-unquote compliant. It's just how it's implemented.
I'm not sure that you are seeing the value in the fact that payment card industry did certify that platform. I think that is not easy to do, and they won't do it just overnight.
Well, and it's also probably a groundbreaking. No auditor had experience in certifying a cloud platform. So there was very much a learning curve, a very interactive process, a lot of due diligence, and that I can appreciate because precedent has not been set for something like this. So what I'm getting at, the long of the short, is this a first step of a longer-term benefit? I'm cautiously optimistic.
Mm-hmm. Does it have an SLA?
Okay, guys, moving on a little bit, something that is this closer to us is there were two news items in the last couple of days in the VMware ecosystem. First of all, EMC is going to put Scale.io in the ESXi kernel. How about that?
That's an interesting move.
EMC can do that. I mean,
yeah. Well, I think it's a great move for him.
I'm not sure, and not only because it's EMC. I have my second thoughts on and let's forget for a second that it is EMC as such. VMware has done a great deal in minimizing the kernel, so we could run it in memory and not on a disk. And now they're bringing in more and more back into the kernel. And I'm not sure if they do it for Scale.io, if they'll have to do it for other things, and how many modules will they put into the kernel. Will that mean that it's going to be installable models, or is it going to be in the kernel, baked in, and the kernel is going to grow when we install it again?
I think it's going to be the latter, but I think it's a natural step. Best example is VMware Virtual SAN. Baked into the kernel. A lot of other things have been baked into the kernel, or, you know, not opt-in, not VIBs, as it were. But I think that this is almost the enterprise play equivalent of what Virtual SAN is, in a loose sense of something that's built into the kernel. And I'm not surprised.
Yeah, it goes beyond the 32 nodes that vSAN can support now. It's gonna be able to support hundreds of nodes, but where is that going to end? Are we going to have a fat kernel again? That's the
right. Is it going to be full of bloatware? That's really an interesting idea.
How many
enterprise bloatware?
Yeah. How many modules can they bring in again into the kernel that we kicked out in the first place?
But it doesn't matter. Not everyone
is going to use, and that's the bigger question here. Is that how many modules do you have to have in that kernel? How big is that? That's maybe, actually, I don't know. I'm not a developer. How big is that going to be? What's the impact of putting those modules? I'm not sure that's going to be a small impact.
I don't think it'll matter, though. The capacity isn't a problem. I mean, it really doesn't matter. Okay, there's a time that ESXi was 32 meg, and that was like a great kind of, you know, chest beater. I don't think it matters. That hard drive space is not a problem for anybody.
No, I think it does matter because of maybe not hard drive space, but memory space.
Well, not only memory space. I mean, the today I install the operating system either on an SD card in the server or over Pixie, and the bigger that is, the more you have to push. I'm not sure that's the best way.
Well, these modules, okay, the other way, right, is what they call a VIB, a VMware Installable Bundle or something, I think is what it stands for, which you see a lot of the ecosystem at large kind of going that route because they can't change the kernel, right? So I think that if they are not running but loaded. Like, if you boot up ESXi, you'll see a long list of things. NFS, I might not even be using NFS, will be loaded. The change block tracking might be used, might not be, right? All these things that might have overhead of minutia are loaded, but then they aren't actually used. One thing that VMware has always done well is manage memory. Okay, so if it's not taking disk space, we don't care about that. The other two things would be CPU and memory. But if they're not being called, I trust the kernel to manage it as good as it can be. So back to my point, I don't think it matters. But I think it's good that it's built in, you know, for the air quote ecosystem that, you know, this particular example is not. I think it makes sense that it's built in, but I think it doesn't matter. I don't think bloatware is a risk here.
I may like the VIB solution better because not everyone's going to use it. There's going to be a marginal part of the VMware customers actually using that as a storage solution, and I don't think all the others should be having it in that installation.
So the VIB approach would definitely fit the least privilege and add what's needed, that type of mindset.
Yes.
But now you have two different realms. You have some built in and some VIBs, and then some on top and then some sideways. I mean, mm-hmm. it's almost too flexible of a platform.
So one can look at this and say it's a convenience for EMC to be able to do this with VMware, right? I'm just wondering, are there any competitive pressures from KVM or Hyper-V that are maybe forcing or making VMware look at why they would be doing this? I mean, obviously EMC wants this to happen. What about from the VM perspective? Do they want this to happen and why?
Well, the first part, competitive pressure. I mean, I think one of the – and Nigel would agree. If you look at the larger storage services changes, everything from storage spaces to SMB 3.0 and a lot of different services, virtual fiber channel, Microsoft have made incredible improvements since Windows Server 2012 and those, I mean, almost really underrated. They made huge changes. So
nobody knows, right? I agree.
Yeah, but nobody knows. That's the bigger part,
right? But it is
there. It is okay, but there's no pressure on VMware to counter that because the market doesn't know.
You're never going to line it up feature for feature. So it's so different that the competition, the pressure is to have something more and better yet different. So I think that the competitive pressure more so is Hyper-V, and I think the KVM part, that's so service provider driven, you know, must have ponytail, all those types of problems where they're going to go do their own thing, right? You don't need an ecosystem led. So
I'm thinking,
you know,
comic book guy from The Simpsons.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm not sure that you are right there.
I'm not always right.
No.
I've never known you to be wrong.
If you think the scalability of a scale IO, and you forget about the limitations of vCenter as a cluster, and you bring in OpenStack to manage your VMs, you may have a solution for VMware to run under a big OpenStack solution. Because one of the limitations of VMware today is the size of the cluster as such.
There is a published max. I think it's, 64 hosts now?
Yeah. So going to that 100-plus and 200-plus hosts is going to be doable in an OpenStack solution if you forget about vCenter. And that would be a solution if you bring in Scale.io.
Yeah, but Rickatron doesn't roll that way. Okay, he likes little modular clusters, and then if it's full, you build another. I'm scale out. I'm pod based. It's just I can't do it all. But what I do, I try to do the best at. And I would never go that route. I would never design something that complicated.
Yeah, I got the picture there. So we kind of got OpenStack back into the picture. There were two news items in the open source space. Not really OpenStack related. Core OS launching Rocket as a container technology. So Nigel may forget about his investments in Docker, and we already have a competitor 2 weeks later. Any thoughts on that?
Breathtaking. Yeah, I just think it's breathtaking, right? I mean, 2 weeks ago, the assumption was the whole world is lining up behind Docker. A week ago, you know, the whole world is lining up behind Docker, and then all of a sudden CoreOS comes out and says, hey, how about this rocket thing?
Yeah, for the listeners that don't know what is happening, CoreOS is one of the core contributors to Docker. That is what is astonishing in this news.
Right. Yeah. You know, so the first thing I think of is, you know, and I think everybody, what really got everyone's attention is it seems like it's a betrayal. Is it a betrayal? I'm not sure.
Yes and no. So I did read up on the CoreOS press release on this. And what they said is that when Docker came along a little over a year ago, so it's only been a year, at their doorstep, and they started working with them, there was this this manifesto about what the Docker container would be. It would be a standard container. And what they said now is that it's no longer what it has become in that year. It's been too much. It's been more for uploading, downloading. There's going to be SDN involved. It's going to be the base for everything. And it's no longer what CoreOS intended to do with it when Docker first came along. So that's why they wanted to go not necessarily competing with Docker, but where Docker is becoming more of a platform, they still want to have that simple standard container. That is the main reason that CoreOS wants to launch Rocket as just an app container instead of a whole platform.
Side note, unrelated. Tomorrow, apparently, IBM and Docker are announcing a huge partnership. Their press release going out tomorrow about that. So, cloud and on-prem ready. So I think you're going to see a lot of things happen around these containers, this type of model, but that's okay because there's just more IT crap that needs to be done. So we need to have options on how to do it.
It's an interesting thing to think about. How many different types of containers do we need in the world, and will there be two or three or one? You know, the best technology doesn't always win. It may be that CoreOS with Rocket may have come up with something that's better, but it may be too late considering the ecosystem that's already lined up behind Docker.
I'm not sure that ecosystem is that big. It is really young.
Look at the names behind it. The names are big. You talk about IBM and Microsoft, and I'm not sure who else, but they're big.
There's a difference between saying that you will support it and making it a primary target of your development and things you bring out. We've seen a lot of that happening in the past. We've seen that with CloudStack, for example. We've seen it with other things, a lot of it in the past. So, oh, this is good. We want to be on the bandwagon early, but if it doesn't turn out to be great, we'll lose it in a minute. And that might be the case here. There's maybe going to be 2, 3, 4 types of container solutions, and there's going to be big vendors lining up behind it, but they're going to lose it in a minute when it's no longer viable enough.
So hold on. Here's what's going to happen, right? This is going to be fundamentally different, I think, because these application models that are going to use something like Docker and containers are going to learn from some of the things that may have been a harder uptick in mainstream commercial, aka where the money is, IT, that are great kind of open sourcey, you know, technologies. So partnering with IBM in the case of Docker, I think that's big because it's going to be a very clear path for persons to make money as salespeople, global services, those types of things. That'll be interesting. But when you take these to a CIO and say, look, these are ways you can develop your apps for your homegrown apps. Nothing against .NET, nothing against using Azure or OpenStack or Docker or heck, Visual Basic 6.0, all right? Don't laugh. They're out there. But all of those application models are options to deploy a new app, and it's just a matter of is it the right, I don't want to say platform, but technology for the app. And so having big names behind it helps, you know? It's kind of like one of those things, I hate to say it, but if people are paid to sell these things, they somehow find a way to sell these things.
How much do you want to start developing your new apps that you want to sell for the next 5 to 10 years on a technology that you're not sure is going to survive?
Oh, it's casual curiosity for the foreseeable future. Absolutely, no doubt. This is a pilot. This is check it out. This is learn. Show me how you're going to make me money, save me money, whatever. That's the arm's reach, the forward sight. That's all you can do with it right now.
But that's the thing that IBM, you know, and Microsoft, for instance, could bring to the table for Docker, is IBM could just say, damn the torpedoes, we are going full speed ahead with this. And that can just – a company like that can cause a shift.
Yep.
You know, it can just say, this is how this works.
Well, yeah, and they could keep doing it for 20 years. I mean, who is still building the mainframes?
Mm-hmm. Right.
IBM. Yeah,
IBM's the oldest technology company, period.
Yeah.
They're doing something right.
That's interesting news. We got a scoop from Rickatron on this show to be announced tomorrow when this airs. Holy shit.
Yeah, he should come on more on this show.
I know. Yeah, where have you been hiding, man?
I've got downtime issues, guys. Come on.
Discloser of secrets. That's how I'm going to think of you from now on. I'm going to think of you like, you know, in a big long robe, you know, with a hood and, you know, carrying a candle in front of you and stuff. I've got the secret. I'm Rickatron.
So I promised two news items out of the open source space. And the second one is that SUSE is adding a Ceph solution in the first half of 2015. And that kind of was weird to me, that SUSE is going to announce a distributed storage platform but built on Ceph. And the main force behind Ceph is Inktank just being acquired by Red Hat. So what's happening there?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. I don't know. I mean, SUSE's what, third place in that space? Do they matter anymore? I mean, if you're doing enterprise implementations, you're going with Red Hat or Ubuntu, and then SUSE is where in that list? I mean, I just kind of think it's a yawner.
The question I have is why choosing this solution if they want to go distributed storage? Why picking just that one that Red Hat just acquired, your biggest competitor?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, is Red Hat going to buy SUSE? I don't think so. I mean, what's this about? I'm not an expert on this. I just look at it and kind of, you know, say, who cares?
Yep. Yeah. Pass.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not newsworthy. You said you were going to bring some news to this show, Hans.
Well, maybe they just did it to make news.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, sure. A lot of times people try to create a situation. You know, you stir to make stuff happen, and maybe that's what, you know, these brands need.
You know, maybe SUSE had their hands held to the fire by a customer that just demanded that they do this integration.
Yeah, or maybe I just stepped into the tourist trap.
Does Ed still work at Inktank, SciPec?
No.
No.
No. Oh, so I guess I can't go ask.
He's at that cloud company up in Seattle. What is it, CenturyLink?
Yeah.
So, I cannot keep up with that guy. Man.
He's moving, man. Ed is a jiggling guy. He's going one place another. Can't tell.
Jingling or jiggling? I don't know.
Jiggling. I didn't know. No. Don't go there. Don't go there. I meant jiggling. Like he puts the moves on, the shift, you know, the shoulder shake. And he's
jiggling.
Jiggling.
Got it.
I did not say that.
Okay, guys.
But wait a minute. What do you know about Ed that we don't?
No, I can't keep up with him. He's doing all that from Indiana. It's pretty impressive.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
Hey, guys, we still have one news item, big or small. You can choose whatever it is. It's in the startups, mergers, and acquisition type of news item, which is Caminario raising $53 million, bringing them to a total of $128 million raised. I think yay for Caminario.
Yeah, me too. Go, baby, go.
Yeah. Nigel was very adamant that I would say that he likes Caminario a lot because he did the proof of concept not that long ago and did like the technology. So I want to take his call on that next week about the technology as such. But there were two parts of the and there's two things about this. There's while we are happy that you raised money to make sure that that product can grow and your company can grow, and then secondary, you always look at how they message that. And oh my, so there's
you missed a god.
Yes. Yeah. I'm an atheist. So there's. I never miss.
Oh, my force.
Yes.
Oh, my sand.
Yeah. I never miss God. So so there's two parts here in the press release that do strike me a little bit in the choice of wordings, is that somehow they want to drive this all to software-defined storage, new, la, la, la. And then this quote. Unlike other startups whose software can link up and control the storage arrays of other hardware providers, Caminario's software only works with Caminario hardware.
Ouch. So much for software.
And that's like, really? Why did you call it software-defined storage?
Wow. Well, you know what's funny, guys? I'm at an event in Las Vegas right now, and let's put
Gartner,
on.
Gartner, are you there for Gartner?
Yeah, I was not going to name drop, but the big analyst firm, right? Oh, yes.
Yeah, please.
So, and the first thing in the keynote, the guy said yesterday, software defined is pretty much moot and stupid. I'm paraphrasing, but that's what he said.
Yeah.
It was kind of funny.
Okay, let's get to the really important thing is, are you playing craps?
No,
and are you,
man.
Are you finding tequila bars?
No, I'm a well-behaved young man nowadays, Mark. I am not gaming. I go on to the booth doing my thing and just hanging out with my team.
Going back to the hotel and using all that bandwidth?
Bandwidth. This is the best hotel bandwidth ever. Speedtest.net going over to all the way up to Seattle. 150 megabits per second at a hotel.
I should wire you some money and have you go play some craps.
So it's where is this? I'm looking out the window. Where am I? Venetian.
Venetian.
Fourth floor. Good internet.
Yeah, I love the Venetian.
So hey, Rick, an even more important question: if you are at Gartner DC, are you wearing a blue suit?
No, but everyone working for Gartner is. No, I'm wearing just a beam green. I come and go in the dark of night, do my thing, you know.
So hey, I promised there were two parts in that press release.
By the way, Rick, before you go back to the press release, there's a Thomas Keller restaurant in the Venetian. It's open for breakfast and lunch. I'm trying to remember what the name of it is. You should go. It's freaking great.
Bouchon.
Go to the Bouchon if you haven't
been
there.
I've gone there twice already, man, baby. Come on. I know how to work this town.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's awesome. It's okay. Glad you've been. Okay. Hans, sorry.
For our listeners, weep. Oh Jesus! Okay, come on. I want to stick to the topic here a little bit.
Oh, you said you're an atheist.
Yeah,
come on, man. Stick to the script.
Oh my goodness. So hey guys, I promised two items in that press release, and the second one is even funnier. It's to the AFA market, all flash array market. And I quote, the hybrid newbies fumbling around and introducing all-flash nimble and tegile arrays as a sign that the market is coming towards the all-flash array being the mainstream SAN array replacement. Really? Did you really think that nimble and tegile added an all-flash because all the rest they sell is rubbish?
Yeah, it's unfortunately, though, that is a poor press release.
Yeah,
and to go out and name your competitors in a press release when you're getting funding is just a huge mistake. Why draw attention to?
Pure,
I guess they don't have to name Pure, but why? I mean, why do that? It's just kind of silly.
I think that's very interesting. If they've named other ones where they presumably think they're better,
no. But what they're doing is they're naming the guys that had. Hybrid arrays that now went all flash. So Pure's already been all flash. So what they're doing is they're naming Nimble and Tegile. you know, as companies that came from hybrid into all-flash arrays. But it's a mistake. It's a marketing bugaboo. And I've got to wonder if, you know, who approved that in that company, because it's stupid.
If you have good engineering, there's no assumption you have good PR teams.
Oh, yeah, and I think Common Era's got good engineering and obviously lousy marketing.
No, hey, I've known them for a while now, and I've supported their technology specifically, and I know that the higher management on C level, they are very nice people to talk to, and so I do question where this came from, but hey, next week we'll probably get a little bit more into the dark of the technology with Nigel. Looking forward to that, and. Last on my agenda is a small piece of sad news in the influencer industry, is that Enrico Signoretti, one of our better friends in the storage blogger sphere, got almost threatened by Nimbus Data to take down a video on his blog. And that is just not how you treat the influencers in the industry.
Did he take it down?
He did.
So he
did, in order to avoid a lawsuit or anything worse than just taking it. So what happened is that they asked it twice with a regular account, in which he said, you know what, guys, it's not really what I do. I don't really take down content that I put on my blog, but I'll be happy to bring an update. Mm-hmm. And The message was that the messaging in the video, which was, by the way, an interview that they sat in front of the camera for, right? But they said that the message does no longer align with their current message today. I was like, yeah, well, then I'll bring you an update if you want that. It is also not sponsored. So this is his content, and they were in front of the camera. Look at it like a journalist.
Was it an authorized person to speak on behalf of their company?
Is the CEO an authorized person to speak on a camera?
I didn't catch
not
it
sure.
as CEO.
I mean, okay. I'm not
probably
sure
shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
it's on that company.
Well, in this case, in the case of Nimbus Data, it is a one-man show, the whole company. So what happened after those two first questions is that he stepped in, the CEO, Tommy Sekovic, he sent an email straight to Enrico to tell him, you do not have the rights to this, which doesn't make sense.
Okay, so here's the thing, right? Anybody who listens to this, if you're marketing in this industry and Nimbus comes to you, don't say anything. Don't publish anything. Nobody talk about Nimbus anymore. Fuck him. End of story.
On more polite terms, I'm with you, Mark, and I'm with Enrico on this, because my blogger roots are kicking in, and I've had controversial topics. You get nasty grams. I've never had lawsuits or the like threatened against me, and there's two things. Number, at least in the U.S., okay, Enrico has an international twist to it, but is it true and is it newsworthy? And the newsworthy is even lesser of a matter because of the blogosphere, right? We're not I like to think I'm awesome, but I am no CNN. And I just think that's crap. That is absolute crap.
Yeah. You know what? Enrico's right to take it down. You know, it's right. If you're going to be a dickhead, your stuff won't be out there.
Oh, I'd make a blog post about the treatment.
He did.
That is absolutely.
So he
updated, I didn't catch that.
What happened is that the video was embedded in a blog post. He put a password on the video and made a big red disclaimer with what happened. And the literal words were, you do not have a written permission to publish this, which is a veiled threat, by the way, to tell you if you still keep it on there, you will be sued by our company. And this is just not how you treat bloggers in this industry.
It's just stupid. Not only that, it's just stupid. Hey, here's stuff about us, you know. Here's stuff about us, right or wrong. And it can't be that far wrong, right? I mean, you know, whatever.
No, you have to look at the bigger picture here. And let me give you the bigger picture of Nimbus Data, if you follow them in the last 2 years, is that this is not a company built for the technology as such. This is a company that is built to be sold. Having all the big players out there already made their play in an all-flash market, there will not be an acquisition anytime soon of another all-flash array. So his only exit possible is an IPO. When going into an IPO, you have to be, what they're trying to do is preparing for that IPO and controlling the message. They're trying to control the media. And probably a few of the things, and I don't know what is in the video, but probably a few of the things in that video do not show the company as he wants it to be when someone starts Googling in favor of that IPO. That is the bigger picture that is happening here, in my humble opinion.
It's over. They're done. They're going down. Sorry, we break you up.
Well, I don't know about that, Mark. I think there's still a lot that needs to be settled, and there's too many decisions to make in this world of new storage. But I think that, Hans, you're right with I don't want to call it strategizing or making a quiet and making sure everything's looking good for any period of due diligence or any research or the like or such. I think there's almost more risk of, you know, when you're still private, there's almost more risk of damaging news, you know, when you're preparing for something like that than if you are public. I almost think that you're very probably in key, Hans, and I just think it's an unfortunate situation. I think Enrico, I cannot say enough good about him. He likes to learn brands. You know, I arranged for him to come out to VeeamON, you know, and I had a small list of influencers, and I, you know, comped the travel for that. But I just think that's a really bad situation that hit a really good member of the community.
Yeah. So the best thing we can give to our audience, if you are in PR or marketing, do not try to revise history. That's all we're trying to tell you here. Yeah. Hey, well, you know what? Let's close out with a good note in the influencer influencer marketing community. Is that our beloved friend Amy Lewis, Comms Ninja, has a new job as director of influence marketing at Solid Fire. Good luck for
Amy. Hey, all right.
Nice. I want to cry.
Yeah, it is well deserved. It is one of our best people we have in this industry. She did a great job at Cisco, and knowing the team she's going to join with Josh Atwell and a whole bunch of great people today at Solid Fire, she's going to do awesome in that team.
Yeah, RJ Weigel. I know RJ from my three-part days. Good guy. And
lucky Solid Fire.
Yeah.
But I'll go on
Matt
one.
Gruen too. Hey, call if Matt, if you hear this, you really snagged a good person there. Matt's a buddy of mine at Solid Fire too.
The other half though is, you know, Cisco's got a lot of great people in especially like their Cisco Champion program and all. So I think that you'll see them carry on. They'll be fine, but man, lucky Solid Fire.
Yeah, anyone they want to hire for the role she just did, big shoes to fill.
Impossible yes. Heels to fill.
Impossible heels to fill.
Hey, nice. Nice. Hey, so the guy who needs to be on the show that's not is Gabriel, right? Because Gabriel's a coworker of Amy's at Cisco, or was.
Yeah.
You know, and so, geez, I want to know how much Gabriel is, like, crying.
Well, maybe
he should be something.
Maybe Gabriel is trying on his new heels as of next week. And on that note, guys, let's wrap this up for this week. It was great having you back on, Ricketron. I hope you find the time in the next few weeks to keep coming back. And Mark, as usual, hey now.
Hello, this is Mark Farley, and you're listening to Secret Windows Phone Apps. And today, we're going to be talking about something that's very, very secret.
I love you.
The secret shopping app. You know, how with some phones, some of those smartphones out there, you can get shopping apps and you can buy stuff right from those apps. Who cares when you have an app for a Windows phone that can buy things anywhere? It's completely possible that this app might only work in the United States, but that's the way it is with a Windows phone. Some things just don't work the same way around the world. It starts by dialing a very special number. You have to memorize it. So listen closely. It's 411. And don't forget it, because that's a big part of the secret. Somebody named Directory Assistance is going to answer the phone when you dial that number. And they're going to ask you who you want to call. And you tell them the store you want to buy something from. Like maybe it's Dick's Sporting Goods. You say, I want to talk to Dick's. Mr. or Mrs. Directory Assistance then is going to tell you the number, but you don't even have to remember it, because they'll say, and you want me to connect you? And you just say, oui, madame, or yavol, mein Freund. And the next thing you know, their phone's going to be ringing, and someone's going to pick up the phone and say something like, hi, you've reached Dick's. And you can say, please connect me to the dumbbell department. And when the guy there picks up the phone and says, dumbbells, you can say, I really want that red 8-pound neoprene dumbbell. And the guy on the other end of the phone will say, you got it, mister. And they'll start asking you your address, where they can ship it, and your credit card number. And the thing you have to do is whisper those things, because they're secrets. And we're all about secret Windows Phone apps. Tune in again to hear another episode of Secret Windows Phone Apps.